Welcome to another episode of the Halloween Podcast. I am your host, Lyle Perez, and today I have a very special guest, somebody that is, I think, is an expert on witches. So, I have Sarah with me today. Sarah, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. Crafty and all that jazz.
Good, good. So, you want to talk about some the history of witches is what we're going to do today?
Yeah, we're going to talk about the history of witches and the persecution of witches.
Oh, persecution.
So interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only thing I really know about witches is what we see on TV all the time, like witches casting spells, turning people into frogs, and you know, being overall evil. The I think they call them the wives of witches or of Satan or something like that. I don't know. I think
the wives of the devil.
Yeah, I think I got that from Hocus Pocus, the Halloween movie, Disney movie.
Oh, that is one of my favorite witch movies. However, the history of witches doesn't quite line up with that.
Doesn't? Wow. Okay. Well, yeah. Since I know nothing about witches, so why don't you go ahead and enlighten me?
Well, one of the first things is, like, our traditional view of witches, which is those long dresses and the big pointed hats, and they're flying on a broom over the sky, or they're, like you said, standing over a big cauldron.
Mm-hmm.
That all comes from this profession that women had from prehistoric Mesopotamia all the way through the Middle and Dark Ages. And that's a profession called alewives. When you go to, like, the Renaissance fair and that kind of thing, you see the women in the alehouses, kind of like that, but they were actually the ones in charge.
Oh.
So they would do all the brewing for the towns.
Okay.
And it would only be for the towns because the science of brewing was not precise. However, brewing ale or beer was very important because clean water sources and the understanding of what clean water is was not known at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of going and grabbing a glass of water, you would go and grab a glass of ale. So these women were very important to the community. It wasn't until about the 15th century that ale could be transported from town to town with the adding of hops to the ale.
Okay. So, like, the first brewing? First beer?
Mm-hmm. First beer. Or they would call it ale more than beer. It would be more like a traditional ale, like we find ales, instead of, like, your Budweiser beer.
Budweiser.
Kind of thing. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, because of the shelf life, the brewing process had to be ongoing, which is one of the reasons that it was a profession for women and not males. Because it had to be so ongoing, it was done mostly in the home.
Hmm.
So it was single women, married women, widowed women, all different walks of life would be doing this. And because it was so prominent and needed in the community, women could make a really good living doing this. It was almost like your first direct sales for stay-at-home moms.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of spamming Facebook, they would put, they would wear tall hats. They would have their cauldrons or have a broom that they were making sure all, like, the vermin stay away and that kind of thing. As well as a lot of times they would have a six-pointed Star of David atop of their door frame.
Okay.
To tell everyone, hey, we're open for business.
We got some beer or some ale in here, so stop by.
Yep, exactly. And it was mostly unmarried women. when we think of ale, we think of like taverns and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And it was only the married women who were allowed to have businesses like that. Else they would be women of ill moral standing, and perhaps there was some more than ale sales going on there. But they were supported in the community and respected tradespersons as long as they paid their guild memberships, which we would consider more like taxes now.
Mm-hmm. You gotta get your cut.
However, things did come to an end with that, which is why we don't see a lot of women breweries now, although that's probably changing with the proficiency of microbrews and that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, they're popping up everywhere around here.
Oh, yeah, here too, on the East Coast. Yeah. But the major change that happened in what we consider our Western history was that of the Black Death plague that kind of changed England and the Middle Ages economically, socially, religiously, everything. And so ale was one of the only stable products that was continued throughout the plagues, because mm-hmm. as long as you had grain, you could make some type of ale.
Right.
And it was needed, because with all that death going around, clean water sources were even scarcer.
Mm-hmm.
So, with the patriarchal society that it was, losing money in other fields, they saw these women making money, and they started to make and enforce laws that prevented the women from making as well as a profit, or even being able to support themselves, because a lot of these women, these businesses, did not have any male family members involved. And those businesses, a lot of times, were taken over by estranged family members.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you had a brother-in-law, you were widowed, and you had your own ale business, your brother-in-law might go, "Oh, well, no, this is my business now."
And that just take kind it. Of thing.
Mm-hmm. And that prevented a lot of the women from continuing their work. However, another big thing was that these women were the first people who were considered witches, and that was another way that they stopped the business.
Okay.
And with the changes in society, it was considered a faux pas for women to work outside the home. They were needed to be homemakers and mothers. The population needed to be replenished. And the patriarchal society at that time thought, well, the way to replenish this is to keep women at home, baby factories and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how we were able to create this stereotypical picture of women.
Okay.
By these very powerful ale wives. So that was a cool little thing to start this off about witches before we get too dark.
To the good stuff.
Into the deep good stuff.
Yeah.
As I kind of hinted, any strong women in society would be accused of being a witch. You could hear, "She's a witch." Throughout society, prehistoric society, one of the first recorded history moments of that is actually found in the Old Testament of the Bible. In 1 Samuel, there's a witch trial that happens. Yeah, and this is a lot of times where, when we think of witch hunters in the Middle Ages to early America, they would use that as a basis for their hunts. And including in the New Testament, there is a lot of warnings about witches and witchcrafts and that kind of thing. When a woman was accused of a witch, you would usually hire a witch hunter or someone who would interrogate these mostly women, although some were men. And this profession, again, really came about from the unease of the plagues. People were feeling this hardship economically, medically. You know, even the people that didn't die were still facing scars and disability from the plague. Psychologically, they just watched almost everyone they knew die, as well as spiritually, where they were depending on the church, and the church kind of abandoned them during this. So the government of the Middle Ages started to use this concept of witches and witch trials to distract and control the mass populace to prevent civil war and uprising. And King James, one of the big kings of England, was one of the biggest catalysts in that. And before he was crowned king, he wrote one of the most popular to this day books on witch hunting and how to detect a witch and how to interrogate witches. He's been documented to have participated in quite a number of witch trials before he was crowned king, as well as after. And Shakespeare actually based a lot of the witch stuff that happens in Macbeth having to do with witches on King James. King James wasn't exactly flattered by that, but it was Shakespeare, and at that time there wasn't much he could do because Shakespeare was that popular.
Right.
So these trials and everything continued in force, in mass, from about the 1500s to the mid-1700s, all across Europe, and because the Americas were founded, discovered, in air quotes, by England, they made their way here as well.
Was there ever any proof that these people were actually witches?
So, by the 17th century, there is a few common traits of accused victims that could be that. So, like, if you were thinking, hey, you know, something's not going right, we need to blame someone, you could kind of look at a list and find a person that fit the list. And so it would usually be a woman, which we've been talking about, of lower class, with a questionable reputation. Someone who doesn't quite fit the norm.
Okay.
They would have either no children or very few children, as we talked about before. By this time, we're trying to rebuild the population. So any woman could not have children was considered abnormal and cursed. And they would usually not be married and either widowed, but sometimes they would be married, and many times in that case, their husbands would disown them as to not be caught up and accused as a witch as well.
Okay.
Because sometimes men were accused.
So they did have, like, a checklist. Like, let's say, this person has a wart on their face, that means they're a witch, or this person is missing an arm, so they must be a witch.
And when someone would be accused, I'm going to stop saying witches so much and more say victims, because the people that were accused were victims of this mass hysteria. These victims would then be taken, and a group of women, included in that group also the witch hunter, would then strip the victim down and shave their hair, sometimes looking for what they considered to be a mark of a devil. However, there is no specific mark of the devil that they were looking at. It wasn't like a 666 written under their armpit or something like that.
Right. So
it could be anything. Almost anything. Moles, warts, freckles, third nipples, bite, like a bug bite, scars, scabs, or liver spots. A lot of the accused were elderly individuals, people who were maybe not contributing to society as well as a younger person may be.
So this was kind of like a purge in a way. I don't know if you've seen the movie. Just get rid of whoever we can't by accusing them as witches.
Yeah, but it's pretty much that was the concept, was let's get rid of these people who aren't contributing the way that the rest of us are. mm-hmm. as well as let's scare the anyone who thinks of maybe being different.
Okay. So just get rid of the weirdos.
Yeah. And things got worse if you thought that was pretty bad. Once they found the mark, the victims were in prison for months, and during those imprisonments, they were interrogated. And it wasn't interrogation like we think of it now. It wasn't Law and Order where they're in the room and they just get talked to for hours. A lot of times, the interrogation would feature sleep deprivation, where they would walk the victim back and forth across a room, only allowing them to stop for short periods of time. They would bind victims, so they would literally take ropes and wrap it around the victim, and two people or pack animals would pull on the ropes until bones would start breaking. They would sometimes just straight up break bones to try to get confessions from the victims. And they would, or they would either get the confession or the victim would die. There's no real recorded cases where a victim would be interrogated and wouldn't die, but wouldn't confess and would then be let go. They were on a mission to get rid of this person.
So it was more of more like torture and not interrogation.
Yeah. Interrogation's the nice way of saying it. But yeah, torture. It was straight up torture. It was crazy. When we think of torture in like Robin Hood Men in Tights, mm-hmm. when they're in the dungeon,
mm-hmm.
and that torture, that was pretty much what they all did to witches.
Oh man.
It's not called the Dark Ages just because there was little sunlight or something like that.
Yeah, well, speaking of all that, I wonder if they got plagued for the dead, if they got blamed for the plague.
They did, and that's one of the things that sparked it, is any time, so after the mass plagues where they were little, people would get accused, but it was a little too hard to have these trials happen then when it was affecting almost the whole country. But just because the plague, as we think of it, was over, mm-hmm. it would still spring up every once in a while. So if a town became affected, it maybe not have been the Black Death, or it may have been as simple as influenza, which at the time would have been a very dangerous thing to have. As soon as someone would get a fever or something, they would begin looking for the person that cursed, that worked with the devil and cursed that sick person.
Mm-hmm.
Now we know that that's not how you get sick.
Right.
A lot of times it was for hygiene and that kind of thing, and the clean water sources like we had talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once these victims had confessed, you would think, okay, they confessed, so the torture's over. Kind of, but they would be again imprisoned, and once they had a group of confessed witches, and once you confess, it's not just saying, I'm a witch, I confess, alright, you got me, I'm a witch. You have to then identify other members of your quote-unquote coven. So essentially, the victims would be accusing other people who would then become victims.
So the people... So the accusers would never... Mm-hmm. The accusers would never... just accept that it was just this one person. They'd have to be like, okay, well, now you got to drag down other people with you.
Yeah, it was, you could, and this does stem from, how you practice magic and witchcraft, in the ethical sense. Now, you don't really do it by yourself. Okay. Just because it's based on energy,
mm-hmm.
and that was one of the things they did get it right. And that also stems from the religious doctrine where it's always more powerful. I forget what the direct quote is from the Bible, but I believe Jesus said it's always better to pray with two or more, mm-hmm. than on your own.
Okay.
Or something like that. I'm not quoting exactly right. But that kind of stems from the idea that people are more powerful when they're in a group. Okay. So if someone's making someone die, they're not doing it on their own. As well as, like you said, it's a great way to be able to purge.
Yeah.
The area. Great in the sense of medieval times, I guess.
Yeah.
So they would be executed, either they would, most of the time they would be hung, unfortunately slowly, where it wasn't the gallows like we think where they go snap, or they fall real fast and their neck snaps. It would be a slow strangle where they would only be a few feet off the ground. Just have, like in Hocus Pocus, as you mentioned before, where they just kind of kick the stool out from under them.
Mm-hmm.
Or they would be burned at the stake. That's where we get that from. They would literally burn the accused victims at the stake. A lot of times they wouldn't burn them alive. They would strangle them out of mercy beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know about you, it's not my preferred way of moving on to the next world.
No, I don't think any way is a good way of leaving this world.
No. So like I said, this did follow, not just stay in England, it did follow into the Americas, and one of the most famous sightings of witch trials happened in America in a town called Salem. Very popular tourist destination now.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time it was just a small little hamlet with just a few families. In the historic sense, it wasn't a mass witch trial as we think of it today. And it wasn't until the Crucible was written, which popularized it,
mm-hmm.
that the Salem witch trials became a historical event as we know it today. Because unfortunately, they were very common like that, even in the New World during that time. About the 16th, 17th century.
Right.
But Salem was a major turning point in stopping the practices once, because of the way the mass hysteria had started in that town and continued.
Okay, so Salem kind of is the first one that said, I don't know if we're going to continue killing these people because we're getting smarter now, so I don't know.
It had happened in England before Salem, but Salem was the first one in the Americas to really go like, hey guys, this is kind of bad. There was one of the male victims of the Salem witch trials was, and I'm terrible with names and I can't remember his name right now, and I don't have it in my notes, but I think his name was Guy. He was literally pressed to death under a plank that they piled stones on in order to get his confession, and he refused to get a confession, and he was a higher up member of society, and that's when the governor, he had some ties to the Massachusetts governor at the time, and that's when he stepped in and said, hey, this is not good, guys. This is pretty bad. Let's stop this, and you know, calm down.
Yeah, I just looked it up, and I believe his name is Giles Corey.
Giles Corey, yes.
If I'm looking at the correct thing online.
Thank you. I am very terrible with names. Yeah, I should have written that down.
He was born on September 11th, 1611, and died on September 19th, 1692.
So, yep.
Older person.
Yeah. So he had been established in the community, and also because he was male, that kind of threw up some more red flags.
Right. So pretty much after that, they just said, you know what, let's not do this anymore.
Yeah. There is a few more that happened in New York and Pennsylvania, but not to the extent of Salem.
How often do you think this happened? Do you think it was like a weekly thing where they killed a witch every week, or was it like every month, or just whenever?
Some places in England, there was a time where it was almost a weekly practice, where the best representation of this in popular culture is Mighty Python and the Holy Grail, where mm-hmm. they go to the scene where they go, she's a witch, and it's kind of just like an informal trial with the duck. But it kind of just would happen like that, where they would just go, this person looked at me cross-eyed, I think they're a witch. Mm-hmm.
And then that was
it. And there were periods, yeah, it would go, there were periods of high witch victims count, and there was periods of low victim count, depending on the status of the government and the set of unease and whether or not the local government felt that there would be a rebellion or they needed to distract the populace.
I wonder if something bad was to happen in the world, that they would blame it on witch, and then that's when the count goes up, and then when everything's calm, nothing's happening, the count stays low.
Exactly, pretty much. Yeah. Is what historically we can find. But with the 1700s, and what really stopped it was the church came out and rightfully disowned the practice.
Which church? Christian church? Catholic?
The Christian church. The okay. Catholic church, which was the Catholic and the English
okay.
Church both came out and were against it. Unfortunately, the practice hasn't been completely abolished, and you can still find witch trials in some third world countries. Currently, there's a really encourage the listeners to look into that if they're looking for any organizations to donate to. There's some great organizations with that.
Okay.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
Well, I did another quick search and I punched in last witch trial on Google, and the first thing that comes up is somebody named Helen Duncan, who died in December 6th, 1956. Was a Scottish medium, best known as the last person to be imprisoned under the British Witchcraft Act of 1935. So mm-hmm. I'm assuming she is the last witch that was burned at the stake, I guess you will, for the modern day, 1956.
The modern day, yeah. In the third world countries, it's a lot of more spiritual. In that children are being accused because it's thought that the spirit of the witch will go into a children's body. But that's a whole nother podcast on that.
So apparently you can never really kill a witch because she just moves into somebody else's body.
Yep. That whole legion with the devil, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. However, must be.
When we talk about modern witchcraft or the actual practice of witchcraft, the devil really isn't involved. To, again, move away from witches, people who practice witchcraft are Wiccans. It's actually a religion called Wicca.
Okay.
And again, speaking of Salem, Massachusetts, you can find a lot of practices of Wicca in Salem. It's kind of become one of the hotbeds for magic in the country. It's said to have an energy around it.
Because of everything that happened?
There's a lot of debate about that. Some in the religion say that there's certain spots in the world that converge energy, such as Stonehenge mm-hmm. is one of those spots. Others say that like the mass hysteria and mass execution that happened in Salem, that spot then has energy to it. So it just depends on which practice that you practice. But all type of Wicca is really all about the balance of nature and energies. There's practices of using natural forces and the natural energies of the world have been thought to be around since before recorded history as well. One of the biggest representations throughout history you would see is the Celt, Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of historic evidence of this, as the Celts were a people that were taken over by the Romans and then by the Anglo-Saxons later on as well, and forced to convert to Christianity, as many cultures around the world have been. However, a lot of the evidence of the practice can be found in Europe as well as the rest of the world. Like I said, Stonehenge is thought to be one of them. Halloween actually is a can be brought back to Wiccan celebrations as well, in a harvest festival, as well as it's thought to be a time of which the veils between the spirit world and the modern world are lifted, and you can commune with the different energies that have passed on.
Yeah, Halloween is not just candy and costumes. It is summoning demons.
Something like that. I don't know any Wiccans that would put it quite like that. It's more a time where you can get a certain type of energy brought to you, or you could help be aided by that energy in doing spells and making potions, which is a little stereotypical to say, but that is part of the Wiccan process. In Salem, I actually got married in Salem, Massachusetts, and there's a magic shop on almost every corner where you could buy anything from small little trinkets and postcards that are blessed to candles to whole spell books.
Nice.
And that thing. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know if I remember this correctly or where I heard this, but I don't know if you know that Salem, where Salem is now, wasn't where any of the witch stuff happened. Wasn't it like further down the road or something like that?
It's not quite in the center of town. It's a little, a few miles out, like 10 miles outside of town, from where the town is now. And that was partly when they were establishing Town Central. They wanted to get away from that type of thing. However, some of the, because when we think of towns now, we think of everything close together. However, back then when we were first establishing the commonwealths and the states and cities and towns, it was very spread out. So in the center of town, you find some of the houses. One of the houses is called now the Witch House, and it is a museum dedicated to the witch trials. But there's memorials. It's one of the only towns that is also a historic national park. Almost the whole town is dedicated to be a national park. It is also has the oldest city hall in the country, which was pretty cool. It's nice. Where we actually got married.
Oh, nice. City Hall.
Yeah.
I wanted to get married at City Hall, but my wife wasn't going to go for it.
No,
actually, I wanted to get married in Vegas by Elvis, but she really didn't want that. I said, okay.
I unfortunately will side with your wife on that one.
No. All right, so I got a question for you. How much, like, how real do you think the Salem witch trials were? Do you think any of them were real witches, or was it just hype?
Okay, so the start of the Salem witch trials was because a slave named Tobaga began doing little tricks with the girls in the town she was in charge of. She would break an egg in a bowl and swirl it around and say things in her native language, and then tell the girls that if they looked in the bowl, they would see the one they were destined to marry. In that fact, I feel like she may, if she was around today, be a Wiccan or a voodoo priestess, which is another aspect of witchcraft. However, other than that, she would have been the only victim that would have any connection with witchcraft. And she was actually one of the ones that did survive. And she, I believe, was released from slavery and died somewhat comfortably. The other victims a lot were what we consider friends. They're Quakers,
mm-hmm.
which are similar to Puritans, but just different enough that they didn't quite like each other. Well, Quakers kind of don't like, they like everyone, but Puritans are very pure about the Bible. We would call them more fundamentalists now, but they called themselves Puritans in the fact that they considered the Bible to need to be purely obeyed and okay. that kind of thing. So that would be...
So one person out of all of the witches that died might have actually been a witch? One yes. out of all of them? So,
out of all of them.
So, which leads me to my next question. Why is Salem such a huge attraction for that now? If none of it was real other than maybe one out of all of them, why is it such a huge deal?
It really comes down to the Crucible. The Crucible is a play, and it did get turned into a movie. That's all right. It's an all right movie. But the play became super popular in the idea of what early American settlements were.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually very exaggerated in what was going on in the actual time. Other than the torture and that kind of thing, witch trials and the documentation we have on them are pretty boring, where it's just letters back and forth between government officials. Very similar if you were to read the letters between congressmen now, men and women now. Not exactly page turners, but the Crucible, there's love stories, there's the witch trials happening, there's girls that are just hysteric. And when you go back and you read the accounts of this hysteria, there's a lot of theories on why this all happened. Some of it was that the girls felt guilty that they had been part of this witchcraft practice with this slave Tobaga.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it was just that they had eaten some moldy bread that made them all trip.
Oh, I have heard of that.
And not a good one.
Yeah, I heard that it was like something that they ate that might have made them hallucinate, and they were just saying yeah. stuff, and then that's how a lot of it came down.
There's a lot of different theories. Unfortunately, it's not something that we'll be able to prove. It's something I think, in my opinion, that it's usually a combination of theories that promote something like that happening.
Right.
I wish overall in the history of witchcraft or witch trials that we could blame it all on some moldy bread.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, a lot of it was just sometimes jealousy, sometimes just wanting to purge those that were different.
Yeah.
That definitely affected Salem as well. And the witch trial, many of the witch trials in the New World in the Americas were against Quakers and that kind of thing. And one of the reasons I live in Pennsylvania, and you won't hear a lot about witch trials in Pennsylvania because it was mostly populated by Quakers. It was kind of the haven for Quakers.
Mm-hmm.
And many people who were persecuted escaped to Pennsylvania.
Hmm. So they jumped ship from Salem to go to Pennsylvania where they wouldn't be, where they wouldn't, like, now that I think about it, I wonder how many other small towns were doing the same thing that was just, it was lost to history. Like, nobody wrote anything like that down, and people were just burning people at the stake, but there's no history of it. I mean,
that's pretty much what was going on, is thought to be of going on. There's some documentation, not as much as Salem, because of the government officials that were in Salem, and that's how it got documented. But it was it wasn't abnormal what happened in Salem. We like to think of, oh, this is the one scar on that time period in America, but no, it was normal, just as normal as it was in England.
Yeah. I mean, who knows what's going to happen years from now? Maybe years from now, there's going to be some law that's like, Facebook has been outlawed. And we're going to think back and be like, it was the norm. I mean, everyone was on Facebook.
Yeah, look at the midwife, that show on Hulu, and how close to home it is right now.
Right.
For that book and series. So who knows? I guess, unfortunately, anything is possible. We just gotta keep remembering what has happened in history beforehand, so that maybe we don't quite make the same mistakes as we have before.
Right, and that's why history is very important. We gotta learn from our mistakes. But unfortunately, there isn't 100% way that we're going to be able to know exactly what happened in history. I mean, now it might be a little bit easier because we got videos, we got audio medium, all that stuff. So it's probably a lot easier now to record what's going on. Like, I'm going to date it, but we're recording this on September 11th. And nonstop on my Facebook feed, on the news, it's all about September 11th. Of 2001, and that was 16 years ago now. So we still have a pretty good idea of what happened. There's really, you can't deny that nothing flew into those buildings because there's video of it. And
yeah, exactly. And that's another thing with events that are happening now as opposed to in the past. One event can happen and can affect the mass populace, where it used to be one event would happen and you could watch the spread of that event, because it would repeat itself over and over, like the witch, in this case, the witch trials, because it started in one place or a couple of different places and just started spreading.
Right. So we do have to remember your history, listen in your history classes. So when you are the one in charge, finally, you won't make these decisions anymore. Because, well, who knows? I mean, maybe in about 100 years from now, time travel might be possible and we can go back to all these times and actually figure out what exactly happened, so we can rewrite the history that we know and actually put in the correct stuff. But that's wishful thinking in about 100, 200 years from now.
Well, and I think a lot of the times when you're viewing things that where there were mass victims like the witch trials or 9/11, it's important to remember that different isn't bad. And a lot of times these things come from the feeling that different is bad and wrong.
Right.
And that's not necessarily the case.
Wow, I just gave myself a really good idea for 200 years from now. What if time travelers were to go back in time and they would set up live feeds from, like, you know, watch the Revolutionary War from 1770, whatever, when it was happening. And they have live feeds. You could watch it on, like, your TV, watch it on Hulu, watch it on Netflix as it's going on in the past.
I believe there's a Doctor Who episode about that.
Is there really? Oh, man, I thought I just came up with something. with something original.
Doctor Who, they've pretty much done everything.
Man, I thought I was in there, but
well, that's also kind of the concept of Doctor Who, where they go and sometimes we'll go to different events in time just to watch it.
Well, I'm talking about live streaming it, like putting up cameras and the person back
home.
That is a
different concept.
Yeah, a person in modern time is just sitting there watching TV, just flipping through the channels. I think I'm going to watch the Salem witch trial from, you know, 1650 or whatever. And they just punch it in 1650 and then boop, the camera's there and they can just sit down and watch it.
That's a different concept for sure.
I'm gonna have to write a certified letter and have FedEx deliver it 200 years from now to my great 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 grandchildren, and give them my idea, so they can become millionaires.
Yeah.
So good times. Yeah, that is the history of witches, more or less the history of the Salem witch trials.
Yeah, or at least part of it. The history of persecution of witches for sure. So, Lai, I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
Who is your favorite witch in television or movies?
My favorite witch? I don't know if I can classify a certain witch. I mean, I don't really. I mean, when I think witches, obviously the first thing that pops into my head, because I'm a 90s kid, is the movie Hocus Pocus. Or Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Those are probably the only two. Maybe yeah. Charmed, but I didn't watch Charmed as a kid. I pretty much, I didn't even watch it now. I just, it's on when my wife watches it. But other than that, I mean, Buffy the Vampire Slayer had a witch in it.
Yeah, Buffy's one of my, Willow's one of my favorites for sure, as well as Hocus Pocus and Sabrina. And you gotta, I mean, Samantha from Bewitched.
Oh, Samantha, yeah.
Have her. There's actually a statue of Samantha in this town center of Salem.
Oh, is there really?
Uh-huh.
Nice. Do you see it at all?
When I was there, I did. We actually got our wedding pictures in front of it.
Nice. Send me a picture and I'll
send you one.
Send
of
it
our
to
pictures.
Me. And I will post it on the show notes or wherever I can so people can see it, probably the Facebook page. And people will be able to see that statue.
Yeah, I'll definitely make sure I send that to you so that we can share that statue with everyone.
Perfect. So, yeah, what about, what's your favorite movie? Witch movie?
My favorite witch movie, and I actually watched it twice while I was writing the notes for the show just because I was depressing myself, is Practical Magic with Sandra Bullock. Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, I've never seen it. The only thing I can tell you is that I used to work at a pawn shop, and that movie would come in regularly for some reason. And I'd have my hands on like two copies at once all the time, and then just sell them, and more people would bring some in. But I never saw it. Never did.
Oh, I really recommend you seeing it.
What's it about?
It's Nicole Kidman and Sandra Bullock are sisters in a town in Maine, and they're great. Great, 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 great ancestor was accused of being a witch, and she was hung, but she used her magic to break the hangman's noose, and she was pregnant with one of the town elders' children, because
mm-hmm.
they're always born as twins in this family, and she built her own house outside of the town and waited for her love to come, and he never did, so she cursed the whole family, preventing them from ever truly being in love. If any member of the family would fall in love, their true love would die. And then they bring someone back to life, and it gets crazy, and I'm not gonna give it away, but it's a really good movie. I really recommend it. There's some I forget who else is in it, but there's some good people in it.
Is it like a chick flick, or am I going to like it?
Okay, so it is a chick flick.
Okay.
However, there's dead people.
Okay,
so I like there's that. People that come back from the dead.
Zombies, yeah, sure.
Zombies. There's possession that
okay,
happens.
Yeah, The Exorcist, I got it. All right.
Mm-hmm. And there's a cowboy.
Cowboy, Brokeback Mountain. Got it. So it's going to be quite a movie, apparently, so I'm going to have to watch it now.
It is. It has a great soundtrack, too. There's lots of Joni Mitchell on the soundtrack.
All right. Well, yeah, sure. I'll give it a go if it's ever... I'm not going to go out of my way to find it, but if I come across it, then I'll be like, okay, I'll go on Sarah's recommendation.
It is on Netflix, so...
Is it? Oh,
it's
man.
Not,
I thought it was going to be harder for me to find.
It's terribly hard to find.
Dang, I wanted it to be hard for me to find. All right, Netflix, here we come. So yeah, I guess that's gonna do it for our conversation on the prosecution of witches.
Well, it was great talking to you today, mm-hmm. and I hope everyone enjoyed learning a little something dark.
Yeah.
Today.
And Sarah, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
All right, so that's gonna do it for this episode of the Halloween Podcast. Sarah, thank you so much again for coming on.
Thank you.
And thank you to all the listeners for sticking around with us while we discussed witches. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/theHalloweenPodcast. You can find us on Twitter at TheHalloweenPod. You can also subscribe on iTunes. Go ahead and leave us a 5-star review. Those always help. And if you want to support the show, you could always go to patreon.com/amazingadvertising. And Amazing Advertising is my other show, so don't be confused by the name. And you can go ahead and get some bonus content there, support the show, help us keep the lights on, help us pay for better equipment, and all that stuff that goes along with podcasting. And yeah, so that's going to do it. And tomorrow I will be back with another Halloween episode. So stay tuned for that. Have a good night, guys.